Good afternoon, everyone. I call this meeting of the Senate Education Committee to order. It is 3:30 on the dot on Wednesday, January 25th. We are in the Belts Committee Room here in the Tom Stewart Building in the state capital of Juneau. I'm going to ask everyone to ensure that their cell phones are on mute, and when speaking, please make sure to include your name and your affiliation. And if you have a unique spelling like I do in my name, it'd be helpful if you include information on how to provide that. Members present today are Vice Chair Senator Gary Stevens, Senator Jesse Keel, Senator Jesse Bjorkman, myself, Senator Lukey Geltobin, and Senator Gray Jackson is excused. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. I just want to thank Lisa from the Juneau LIO for moderating today, and Mary Gwen also for being coming from Senate Recordings for documenting today's meetings. Today's agenda includes a series of presentations from education stakeholders on fiscal challenges facing public education here in Alaska. Hopefully, they'll also offer some solutions and provide information that we can use as we work toward what a potential legislative action might be to assist and support our schools. We'll be hearing presentations from Dr. Parity, the Executive Director of the Alaska Council for School Administrators. She's here on Teams with us. In the room, we have Executive Director Sarah Sledge from the Coalition for Education Equity. Also here in person, we have Executive Director Lon Garrison from the Association of Alaska School Boards. And on Teams, to round us out, we have President of NEA, Tom Claymeyer. Copies of today's presentations are posted on BASIS and available here at the table by the door. Our first presentation today is by Dr. Parity from the Alaska Council of School Administrators. I just want to thank you so very much for joining us. I know sometimes it's difficult, but I'm very excited that we have this virtual platform so that we can hear your words and see you during this presentation. I'm going to ask if you can please identify yourself for the record and begin your presentation at your convenience.
Thank you so much for the invitation to join you today, and good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dr. Lisa Skiles Parity. I am the Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators, or ACSA. And Madam Chair, I can't see the slides very well, so I'm going to be working from my slides, and I will just say next slide, and hopefully we'll stay in sync. So if I get off, please let me know. Thank you. So for the first slide, the Alaska Council of School Administrators was created to serve as an umbrella for some of Alaska's premier educational leadership organizations, including the Alaska Superintendents Association, the Alaska Association of Secondary School Principals, the Alaska Association of Elementary School Principals, the Alaska School Business Officials, and all of the hardworking school administrators and many other educators across Alaska. Again, thank you for inviting me to speak today on the fiscal issues that face Alaska public schools. Next slide, please. ACSA supports and represents education leaders in all 54 school districts in Alaska. And united, we share priorities in both in our state's rural and urban communities. And I think we maybe skipped a slide. Sorry, I can kind of see a reflection if we could go back one. There we go. Thank you. So we represent all 54 school districts, and we share common priorities as educators and represent our state's rural and urban communities. But I think the reason I like to share this slide is that we represent all students, and the Venn diagram between all of the groups representing today, the overlap would be students. That's what we're here for. Next slide, please. So I do want to address, next slide. Thank you. I do want to address a couple what we would like to say are misunderstandings of funding. So we want to share some facts and data that show where education funding is expended. And there is a slide before you that will share and clarify that education is going to the classroom. So in 2023, the school district expenditure data from the Department of Education and Early Development compiled by the Legislative Finance Office shows that 74% of school districts' budgets go to instruction, with only 2% going to district administration. And I thought that was important to share just to clear up any misunderstandings about where dollars are flowing. Slide 4, please. Thank you. Yes, Alaska ranks 6th in national per pupil K through 12 funding in raw dollars. But as we all know, the cost of living, especially in rural and remote Alaska, is higher than most of the country. So in a study conducted by ICER at the University of Alaska, they found that when 2019 education spending in Alaska was adjusted to the national average for cost of living, Alaska was underfunding education by 2%. And Madam Chairman, I understand that the author of some of this data will be with you at a later point, so I will not expand on that. Slide, next slide, please. Each year, our members work together to develop what are called the joint position statements. And I know many of you have seen these for several years, and some of you are new to them. The joint position statements envelop the highest priorities for education policy positions in Alaska. While student achievement is always our number one priority, adequate funding remains our most critical need. And I do believe you have a handout associated with this slide. Next slide, please. Policymakers must recognize the diminishing value of flat funding in relation to inflation. Early notification of funding and predictable funding are crucial to sound financial management, as well as recruitment and retention of high-quality educators. Flat funding for public education is a cut to the budgets of every public school in Alaska, as it does not account for inflation. And if we could next go to slide 7, I know you are all aware that we're at a 40-year high with regard to inflation, and that really results in an unsustainable loss of our purchasing power. And you can really see that demonstrated with what we like to call our pencil chart. Again, the pencil chart shows in the black line shows inflation adjustment to FY12 value of the BSA of 5,930 in FY23 has an FY12 value of 4,776 when adjusted for inflation. And I just think this slide tells a story, and again, appreciate the data source as the Legislative Finance Office. I'd like to propose some discussion about perhaps a trigger being considered in the law with regard to going forward around the base student allocation and inflation. And I don't have specifics of what that might look like, other than to say at some point allowing time for the decision, you know, and it is the decision of the policymakers and legislators. We understand that to make that decision each year. But if at a certain time that hasn't been done to address the inflation, that there be some kind of trigger in the law to tie it to the increases in inflation. So one thing for consideration and to look at further that we'd like to suggest is some trigger so that we do not go for this many years again, not being compensated for inflation and thereby really diminishing our purchasing power. Next slide, please. I wanted to show you the transportation chart. partially because it's been such a huge issue in the news for many of our school districts. And it's important, I think, to say that, you know, we believe and we believe you believe that Alaskan students deserve safe, reliable transportation from home to school. And I just note that the per student amount provided to districts from the state for this vital service has not been increased since 2016. And if you were to take, it's one of our fastest rising categories of inflation. It's running over 20% higher in April of 2022 compared to the previous April. So we wanted to just give you a visual on that. And this often causes districts to shift funding to transport their students to school from potential classroom sources. Next slide, please. So in the last year, Alaska saw a consumer price index increase of almost 8%. By flat funding education, districts are left to fill the funding gaps for the increasing costs of healthcare, utilities, student transportation, deferred maintenance, shipping costs, and supplies, to name a few. Money appropriated for public schools with flat funding will not stretch as far as it did in prior years. And I know some of you have heard me say, we used to do more with less, and now we have to do less with less because these costs have been escalating out of our control. Next slide, please. Early notification of funding and stable funding is crucial to school district sound financial management. You want us to be good stewards of these dollars, and we want to be good stewards of these dollars. But in order to be good stewards of these dollars, we need to have timely, reliable, predictable funding. And that is also crucial because I know that you're aware we're in a education shortage, the likes of which Alaska has not seen before, against a backdrop of a national shortage in educators as well. So this is a very important recruitment and retention tool of our educators. We need to be able to sign our contracts with our existing high-quality educators to retain them, and we need to be able to recruit. Many districts are in a constant recruiting cycle. We need to have our budgets in order to do that. We're in the greatest period of education staff shortage in the history of Alaska, and I think what I want to make sure you know is that this crisis is at every level of our system, in our K-12 system. It's teachers, it's substitutes, it's mechanics, it's bus drivers, it's paraprofessionals, it's principals, it's superintendents, and education professionals such as our business managers are all feeling it. So this is a across-the-board shortage that we're in. In another ICER study, ICER at the University of Alaska, they found that every time an Alaska teacher is replaced, it costs the school district over $20,000. And I suspect that this amount is low because this study was done prior to us being in a 40-year high inflation rate period. And I believe you will be hearing from the researcher again, so we won't expand on that. Other than to say these costs include recruitment, going to job fairs, interview process, screening of applicants, onboarding, all of the things that school districts need to do to find and bring a new educator on. And that is much harder to do now than it has been, you know, in years, if not ever. Similarly, in a RAND study, they found that the cost of replacing a principal is approximately $75,000 per principal. Next slide, please. So this is a slide I'd like to show, and frankly, the superintendent composite that has the X's on it before you is not current. I will provide you a current one if you like, but you'd have to cross out probably another 8 individuals, 8 or 9 individuals on this to be accurate. And I share it with you. This is from 2014. We've had almost a full turnover. And this frequent teacher turnover with principal and teacher turnover leads to instability in Alaska's schools. And you're going to hear more about that from my colleague in his testimony. But the reason I want to show it to you is if you think in a business context about turnover, where the superintendent would be your CEO and consider that they're turning over constantly, and then the principal would be your middle management and they're turning over constantly, and then your frontline staff as your teachers turning over in a spin cycle, if you will, I ask you, what would your outcome be in that business environment? And I think it's important to think about that because education is also business. We're in the business of educating students. And we usually are either the top employer in a community or in the top, I don't know, 3 employers in the community. So we really need to stabilize school districts in order for us to have increased student achievement. The next slide is just a look at our first day teacher vacancies in Alaska. And this data is from the Department of Education and Early Development. Just give you a second to look at it. I was really, really taken with this slide. It's drastic. I think it says we had almost 400 vacancies on our first day. And this, you know, the breakdown of these, you know, we struggle to have special education teachers. We struggle, as I said, in almost every area. Next slide, please. So just for a second, I'm going to talk about the turnover of school principal. Not only hurts a school's budget, it does have a deep effect on our students. The Wallace Foundation shared in the school leader study that when a strong principal are at the helm of a school, they positively influence the school culture and the instruction quality of the whole system of teachers. That makes sense. However, when a principal turnover occurs, students achieve less in both math and reading during the first year after leader turnover. And schools that experience principal churn year after year, which is some of what we experience here in Alaska, realize serious cumulative negative effects on students. A condition then is exacerbated by schools serving underprivileged students. So this is from the American Journal of Education. And I also just want to say that we're in a Groundhog Day cycle of uncertainty. This unpredictable funding leads to district uncertainty, which leads to district instability, and ultimately, we know, impacts instruction negatively. So we really need to get out of that cycle. Slide 14, please. So we surveyed our superintendent members, and I know many of them received support from our business managers, and just asked them what percentage of a BSA increase they would like to see to be made whole for this, for the years of flat funding. And the data we received back said they shared, you know, between 14 and 18% of a BSA increase would balance their current budget. This increase, however, will only help them cover their current operating costs. So there's been this idea that if we increase the BSA, that we then have money available to do a bunch of extra things. But the truth is we are going to be starting to make districts whole and give them stability so that we can then move forward from there. One district shared they have seen 46% increase to fuel costs. 46% increase. 38% increase to utilities. 20% increase to classroom supplies. Another superintendent shared that in FY24 is the first year of a BSA increase since 2017, and the increase is to fund the READS Act implementation, which we all agree is a huge priority, which will that percent increase will not cover what we even need to expend to do that properly. And I'm happy to share additional feedback from that survey with you offline. Another district shared that they're struggling to recruit and retain high-quality educators. Funding challenges have made it difficult for Alaska to be competitive in attracting qualified educators. Facing rising costs and inflation, Alaskan districts will likely lose many high-quality, non-tenured educators due to budget reductions. Those educators will be forced to move out of state in search of other jobs, making it even more difficult to staff already critically understaffed schools. So by increasing in the inflation-proofing the BSA, which is what we would like you to consider, the state will be able to end the cycle of uncertainty school districts face and help improve educator recruitment and retention, which ultimately will improve our outcomes of our students. Next slide, please. And here, I think each of you already have my contact information, cell phone, et cetera, and are always welcome to use that. I'll just say that when those of us that are presenting today met, we talked about the different areas that we could each talk about and give additive information throughout all of our presentations. So I'm available to answer any questions and appreciate my colleagues who are also going to be testifying with you. And I know together we are trying to give a picture and some solutions along the way that will help you as our policymakers make good decisions for education in Alaska. So thank you for all you do, and thank you for the opportunity to share today about this most important issue in education. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Parody. I would like to open it up for some questions, as I know that you have to go in a few moments. So I think Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just curious, Dr. Parody, on the on slide 7, you talked about triggers. Could you be a little more specific? What do you mean by triggers in the base student allocation?
Oh, sorry. Through the chair, Senator Stevens, thank you for the great question. I think we've had some discussion about some kind of statutory trigger so that by perhaps a date certain, the legislature would act on education budget. This really goes to timely, reliable, predictable, as well as inflation proofing the BSA. And so if it was possible to have some kind of date that would trigger, if this hasn't happened by this time, that there would be an automatic increase in just to match the increase in inflation if that's happened by a metric that would be agreed upon. Is that more clear, Senator Stevens?
Another question. Just to be straightforward with you, Dr. Parody, there's a lot of interest in our majority caucus in education funding, but there's also been a lot of talk about sideboards. How do you do that? How do you, if you add more money, then how can you make sure the money is being used where you want it to be used? I think there's a bit of a problem in setting up criteria like that, but do you have any reflection on that?
Madam Chairman, Senator Stevens, or President Stevens, I should say, I don't think there's an educator I know that's afraid of accountability and wouldn't be supportive to some kind of guardrails. Having said that, I really want to emphasize that, and you know this from being an education champion for years, education's foundation is cracking. We're in a very difficult environment across the country, and sometimes our problems in Alaska are worse than even the rest of the country. And so I really want to emphasize that any increases to make us whole this year are really doing just that. There is not additional money to go and support additional tutoring or hire additional teachers or something on top of what we're doing. It's to shore up and best be able to serve our students within our current budgets. So in terms of a BSA increase this year, I think all you have to do is look at the pencil chart and realize that it's long overdue and that we do need to be made whole. Now, going forward, in terms of some kind of a trigger to say, you know, how do we stay, you know, concurrent with inflation increases, you know, maybe there needs to be, I'd have to think about what those might look like that would be fair. But the bottom line is, we have continued to educate students. We've continued to problem solve. We came through the pandemic, all without increases. And it's starting to show, and we need support. Probably, you know, I feel like it's urgent. And then to keep us whole going forward, you know, those are where those discussions need to happen about greater accountability. You know, what we know is that if we can stabilize school districts at every level, you're going to start to see that greater accountability. If we continue to do good work on early education and the best practices and the research that we know make a difference for students, we support them to take advantage of career technical education opportunities. All those pieces, the system will write itself. So we're not afraid of accountability. Happy to discuss what that can look like, but I really want to be clear that we're not asking for whipped cream or ice cream on top of the pie. We're just asking for crust, you know, or the filling at this point. And so I hope that's a decent answer. And I would love to think about maybe some additional sideboards that we could suggest with our members and my colleagues who are in the room.
Thank you. That's a great answer. Thanks.
Thank you. We have a question from Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Parody, thank you for joining us in Senate Education today. I just want to reiterate, certainly lots of people around the state talking about workforce development needs and training that we need to meet the demands of our economy and modern workforce. With an increase to the BSA of between 14 and 18%. I kind of figured just scratching down loss to inflation was about 16%. But what you're telling this committee is that amount between 14 and 18% just makes up inflation and allows school districts across the state to keep doing what they're doing now. In 10 years, we've seen cuts to education that have meant cuts to CTE programs, career and technical education. We've seen cuts to world languages. We've seen cuts to counseling services. We've seen cuts to librarians. We've seen cuts to nurses. We've seen cuts to school lunch program. We've seen cuts to janitorial services. We have seen cuts to the ability for programs to move forward that really are the reason why many kids are happy about getting up and going to school every day. So what you're telling us is if we agree to increase the BSA by about 16%, that just kind of stops the bleeding in Alaska schools and really stops schools from having to cut. And if we want to actually get back to where we were 10 years ago with the workforce development training and with all of the educational opportunities that were available then, we have to make a significant investment over and above that amount of money, don't we?
Madam Chairman, Senator Bjorkman, I'm going to say absolutely with an exclamation point, and thank you for articulating that so well. We do need to get back because our students need to be competitive, and we're not paying the highest in the country. That is a myth. We have lost so much ground and so much competitiveness from this in this time frame that it's going to take investment. in order to get us back on our feet. And then we need to be focused forward on workforce, on pipelining our kids from those CTE pathways in, right into our needs as a state. I know I heard recently we're down 20% across most sectors. I think it's probably much worse in education, but yes, that is exactly where we need to go. And our members want to do that. It's, we are happy to talk about pedagogy and design and making sure we're cutting edge for our students. Students are our highest priority and their student achievement. Having said that, we need the tools. We need to stabilize districts and we need the tools to do it. And once we have an investment to get us caught back up and maybe some mechanism to keep us at least above water, I think we're going to see some, you know, amazing things. If, and I'll close up by saying, you know, if you think about what educators just went through, which was traumatic for our students and families and communities across Alaska, but educators were frontline heroes. They pivoted on a dime to continue to serve our students in situation. They had no playbook. They didn't do anything except, okay, we're going to problem solve and continue to serve our students in the best way possible. And sometimes out in the rural remote areas of our state, that was paper and pencil packets. Others, it was virtual education. We did what it took to keep our kids safe, first and foremost, and then to continue to try to educate them. But we need support and investment so that we can get current, get healthy, and move forward to best support our students. And, you know, our students need that too. So I really appreciate the way you articulated it. I think you're exactly right. And I know my colleagues are going to talk about different pieces of that as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Parody, on slide 12, you mentioned the gravity of those first day vacancies as schools and students around the state start school. Could you talk about the impacts of those vacancies on the educational opportunities that our students have and the impacts on outcomes that happen as a result of those vacancies?
Madam Chair, Senator Bjorkman, thank you for the question. And I can just say that those vacancies, you know, on its face, we know that when you do not have a teacher in the classroom, the education that student is receiving is impacted. And so I really commend the people out there, our principals, our central office folks, our paraprofessionals who have been stepping up and filling classrooms. So we couldn't be doing it. And I will tell you, you know, often I'll try to reach out to a principal and they'll say, I'm sorry, they're covering a class, or a superintendent who's like, they're covering this week in a class where we don't have a teacher. That is happening constantly. That means we're not having the expertise that teachers have with their students. And that's not to be saying anything negative about the people who are helping to cover those, but the expertise that teachers have, which is, you know, why they go to school, that's why they are certified teachers. I think about a case of a special ed teacher who we don't have in a class and we might be covering with a long-term sub or aid or a paraprofessional for whatever period necessary. Well, you know, that student needs appropriate services. So I just think the impact case by case is significant. And when you look at the cumulative effect, it's urgent. And it's not for lack of school districts and building leaders trying to fill those vacancies. They're trying. But we have lost so much competitiveness. Educators in the lower 48, where we have historically relied to fill a lot of our positions, can go anywhere. We don't have the draw. We don't have the retirement benefits, which you'll hear about more from NEA Alaska. We don't have the competitive salary. So we don't have the ability to pool those teachers from this diminished pool to Alaska in the ways that we used to be able to. And it is a significant impact ultimately to our students' learning. And it's time to shift that. It's time to turn that around. And I also know that the University of Alaska is working hard to produce more teachers, that they are acutely aware of our needs and the need to produce more teachers in the state. Having said that, we have to move now to make those investments. And I do apologize. I am in Ketchikan, by the way. If you get a chance to see the Marine simulator here, I want to tell you, it's amazing in terms of workforce. So just saying, pipelining kids to that experience, we should be doing that. So you're exactly right, Senator Bjorkman, and thank you for the question. And Madam Chair, if it's okay, I do need to go.
We do have one last question, but I do know that Senator Keel can also reach out at another point. However, if you have a few moments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll ask it more briefly than I usually do. Can you lend any insights on where these vacancies are? It's going to make a much bigger difference to have a teacher vacancy in a tiny school than it is in a big one.
You are correct, but I think we have vacancies across the state. So I would like to get that information for you offline and share it with the committee.
Madam Chair, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr.
Thank you.
We hope you have a safe travel home. We're going to take a brief at ease now as
Thank
we
you.
Do a transition. Oh, we will keep going as we have Sarah Sledge from the Coalition for Education Equity joining us with a presentation to continue this conversation on the current status of education funding in our schools.
Madam Chair.
Senator Stevens.
Before Ms. Sledge speaks, one thing that I wanted to like to have asked Dr. Parody, you know, we've all been through an election recently in November, and one of the things I'm sure all of us have heard is people say, wait a minute, we spend more money per student than any state in the United States, and that's true. And I've seen that chart. We're at the top and all the other states below us, but that doesn't take into account the cost of living. So I would like to see a chart. I've never seen it. That places us somewhere within all of the other states. I'm sure it's out there. Maybe we've talked about this before. Maybe someone's going to present that to us. But that's a clearer visual to our constituents that we're somewhere in the middle. We're not at the top.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. And we do have ICER presenting to us on Friday, and I will ask them to include that chart.
Thank you.
Executive Director Sarah Sledge here. Would you please state your name for the record and begin your presentation when you're ready?
Great. Thank you. For the record, my name is Sarah Sledge. I'm the Executive Director of the Coalition for Education Equity. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thanks so much for inviting us here today to present on issues affecting education in Alaska. And I just want to give a shout out and thank you to Dr. Parody for her excellent presentation. We are all going to touch on different aspects of the issue, but we are also going to probably be repetitive in some ways, so I apologize in advance for any redundancies. Coalition for Education Equity is a member-based statewide nonprofit organization representing Alaska school districts, organizations, and individuals concerned about the quality and breadth of educational opportunities available to Alaska's children. Our organization was founded in 1996, formerly known as Citizens for the Educational Advancement of Alaska's Children. We litigated and successfully settled both the Kasaili and Moore lawsuits in the state of Alaska. These landmark education court cases continue to guide the work that we do today. We were asked to present to you today on what is needed to adequately support education in Alaska. Our membership also annually comes up with our top priorities. They are often the same. Our membership this year has identified adequate investment in public education, addressing the teacher and other education staffing shortages, and significant investment in school construction and major maintenance as their most urgent priorities for education. The Coalition for Education Equity believes that a successful education system is essential to having a thriving state. There have been multiple thorough articles in our Alaska news media outlets recently that have detailed the impact of the budget squeeze on our schools. And it is clear that continued flat funding of our education budget is not in the best interest of a successful education system, and that it is, in fact, doing damage to our education structure. Our current education funding levels are insufficient. Most of our school districts have been preparing for and are currently already experiencing a significant deficit in their budgets. Historic 40-year high inflation rates have resulted in rising costs in all areas. I've included here just three examples of some of our member school districts and some of the fixed cost increases that they are experiencing in their school districts. We're seeing increases in fuel, utilities, cost of new construction. I'll land on that one for just a moment. Cost of new instruction up approximately 20%. And where this is especially significant right now is where we have a construction grant program in the state of Alaska. If a school district got one of those grants and it had been bid in fiscal year 19 or fiscal year 20 and now that project is underway, those costs have increased 20% and now there's not sufficient funding to complete those projects. So we're definitely seeing that have an impact on our school districts. Supply costs, insurance costs, you'll see similar numbers across the board. Regardless of the size of our school districts, they are all seeing these cost increases. And these are things that they have to pay for in order to deliver education to our children. One other thing I'll point out on this slide, on the third column, no carryover funds in our CIP account. We've had districts that have been, they put their money away into reserves in order to have for that eventuality that their boiler blows or that something happens that they need to address right away. Dr. Parity talked about cost shifting because of rising costs in areas that districts don't have control over, that cost shifting happens, and then you might end up with no money left in your reserves account to address those things when they go wrong. So we do have districts that are sitting with no money in their reserves or carryover accounts. And so if something happens and those schools, they won't have a way to address those. One of our member school districts reports a current $600,000 to $700,000 shortfall in their budget. Another states that costs have gone up for their district between $800,000 to $1 million since the last BSA increase in 2017. These are significant percentages of their overall budgets. And I apologize, you're going to hear these numbers over and over again today also, but from 2011 to 2022, the BSA has increased only 4.29%, while Alaska's Urban Consumer Price Index has risen 24.6%. And as you can see from this chart, these rising costs of budget shortfalls have an impact on multiple aspects of delivering an education in Alaska. So there's fuel and energy costs, facilities, maintenance and repair, capital improvements, teacher housing, insurance premiums, funding for teacher and other staff salaries. The funding shortfalls affect the ability of our school districts to provide counselors, nurses, special education aides, arts and sporting programs, and career and technical education for our children. Additionally, budget uncertainty and late decision-making mean that schools are unable to plan effectively and efficiently. They lose purchasing power. This increases fuel and maintenance costs. And can often lead to teacher turnover, which we've already heard a little bit about. These are some of our requests in terms of how to address these issues. We ask the legislature and administration to ensure that education funding sources are reliable and adequate, and that funding decisions are made in a timely manner that enables school districts to plan efficiently and responsibly. Stability in our annual pre-K through 12 education funding will enable our public school districts to budget effectively and efficiently, which contributes to their ability to recruit and retain quality educators and provides greater capacity to focus on maintaining and improving quality instruction for our children. We urge our state leaders to consider and act on revenue measures to support public education. Coalition for Education Equity supports efforts to develop and pass a fiscal plan for Alaska. Most urgently, increasing the base student allocation, the BSA, is a critical need for our school districts and our students. Education funding does have a direct impact on the ability to hire and retain teachers, not only because it affects salaries, but it also affects other factors associated with teacher satisfaction, such as available instructional resources and support staff, building conditions, and available housing. Recruiting and retaining quality educators has a significant impact on student outcomes, and we often see that the highest teacher turnover is in the highest need schools. Virtually every Coalition for Education Equity school district member has reported that it is becoming nearly impossible to fill all of their teacher vacancies, and we know that this is true across the state. Stability for principals and superintendents has also become volatile, which influences overall institutional stability. I'd like to share an anecdote from one of our school districts to demonstrate what this looks like for them. These are their words. We currently have three certified vacancies, one elementary teacher, one special education teacher, and one administrator for a middle high school assistant principal. To address the elementary teacher vacancy, we had to collapse three classes into two. Both class sizes are now larger than optimal. The special education teacher vacancy is being addressed by the two other special education teachers taking on additional caseload responsibilities with stipend pay. And our special education director is spending a part of the day providing services to our pre-K and homebound students, as well as picking up IEP writing responsibilities for some students. The administrator vacancy has played havoc with our discipline system at the middle high school, exacerbated when we also lost our behavior specialist for about a month. Our principal is brand new and has not been able to do some of the key work with instructional coaching, relationship building with staff, parents, and students, and our out-of-school suspension rate at the beginning of the year was very high as we had no place to put students for in-school suspension. We have finally managed to hire a new assistant principal who is coming on board in a week, but there has been a lot of fallout in terms of staff morale, the principal's self-efficacy, etc. We have also had to cut several positions over the last few years due to flat funding and the expiration of COVID funding, including our elementary school counselor, our music teacher at the elementary school, and the behavioral specialist position at the elementary school. This puts a lot more strain on the administrators to support students at a time when mental health issues are rising. Arts and music are also a crucial part of student education, so cutting these impacts both our students and our community at large. We've seen a large amount of turnover in classified positions, continue to struggle to hire special education paraprofessionals, custodians, and the substitute shortage is real. We've had to shut down our high school twice and do remote learning days because we've had too many staff out and not enough substitutes to have any safe way to hold school. Affordable available teacher housing is an increasingly prevalent issue for school districts on and off the road system, with appropriate housing simply unavailable in some villages and out of reach for teachers in urban areas due to high housing costs. There's a continued issue with the teacher retirement system, and I think you'll hear about that later from Tom Claymire, but this is one of the top-cited factors affecting teacher turnover. Compounding these other issues is the ongoing concern around the lack of perceived value and respect for educators, education as a profession, and our public education system. I just want to pause and say that holding this hearing lets our teachers and our educators know how much you value them, and I just want to thank you again for that. They really have had a lot to deal with over the last few years, and they are amazing and really care about our children. The final priority that I'd like to talk about is just the condition of our school facilities. Between 2015 and 2022, there were 1,047 school major maintenance projects that were requested by our school districts, and 114, or 11% of those, have been funded. While the fiscal year 23 budget included funding to backfill a serious backlog of REAA construction and major maintenance and school bond debt reimbursement projects, the number of projects currently on the major maintenance list is huge. It's 97 current requests totaling $217.6 million. There remain many school facilities across the state in serious disrepair, resulting in unsafe, unhealthy environments for children and school staff. Material costs are skyrocketing, contractors are scarce and expensive, and even routine maintenance has become a challenge for many of our school districts. The CIP application process is thorough, and it is set up to ensure that school capital projects are needed, well planned and designed, and a good use of our state funding. However, this process, depending on the scope of the project, can cost school districts between $2,000 to $3,000 up to $75,000 to $100,000 to prepare and submit the CIP application. Getting design teams to rural village schools for these assessments and to prepare cost estimates can be especially expensive. Many school districts use outside assistance to help them put their grant application packets together, which can range from $2,500 to $10,000, depending on the number of projects. In addition to this initial cost, there's an ongoing cost to reapply when projects are not funded. The application must be updated, and the cost to resubmit can run around $8,000 every 2 years. This can add up to a significant amount of money for our school districts over the years. And there are also costs involved with making do in the meantime, working with district maintenance staff or hired contractors to make fixes or repairs that are temporary and insufficient. The cost involved in taking these actions don't solve the problem and are sunk costs for our school districts. And I'd like to just share a couple of scenarios with you about what that is like in reality for our school districts. Actually, I'll share one in the interest of time, but it will give you a good idea of what it is like when maintenance issues build up over time and they're not addressed, the kind of damage that they can result in. So this is an extreme example that I'm sharing with you, but this is a school that was built in 1979 and has never been renovated. As a lot of our school CIP projects, you'll see that they are often roof repairs or roof replacements. The Alaskan winters are pretty rough on our roofs, but that can often lead to ice damming, leaking into the roof, and then that freezes and expands and it causes additional problems. So in this building, the roof continually leaks when the temperatures rise above freezing. The leaking has sunk down into the ribs of the walls, and you can see here that the wall is bowing and separating out from the exterior of the building. That causes window breakage. On the interior of the building, it's caused cabinets to separate from the walls, and also mold, the development of mold in the walls. Here's just a picture of the inside. This school building also has a foundation that's deteriorating from that that damage. The soil underneath the school building also is full of moisture, so the building is sinking. So that bottom right-hand picture you see is them propping up the bottom of the building. We know that they have snow layering up on the roof every year, and their maintenance crew is there shoveling it off every year. So it's not that they're not trying to address the issues. They're doing all that they can with the tools that they have and the resources that they have, but it's just not enough to make this building safe and whole for our students. And they are having portions of this building that they no longer use, as we can see. I can't imagine having to teach in a building like this or be a student in a building like this. For many of our school districts, the projects they are applying for assistance with, once completed, will result in significant cost savings due to improved energy efficiency and the reduced need for ongoing maintenance and repair. This need for major maintenance for our school districts is real and it's significant. For many schools, the need is urgent. For all of our school districts, the financial impact is substantial, and our children deserve a safe, healthy environment in which to learn. And I'll conclude there. I'm deeply grateful to all of you for the time that you've given today and for all of your time that you give every day in service to our state. Thank you for attention to this critical matter.
Thank you, Executive Director Sledge. I know that we are coming up on a little bit of a time crunch as we have two more presenters. So I'm going to ask if our committee members have any brief questions, and to allow any longer questions for offline. Senator Stevens.
Just a brief question, and I'd be glad to speak to you later about this, but are we in compliance with Kasuli and the Moore lawsuits? Are we still at risk as a state or not following through? And if that's a long answer, maybe we can talk later about it.
It's probably a long answer, but I think we're really, we're getting down to funding levels where our schools are not able to provide an adequate education for our kids, and I think that we're dangerously close to not meeting that adequacy benchmark. With Kasuli, I think that the school major maintenance projects across the state are significant. They're not just in REAA schools. They're all over the state. I'm very grateful that the REAA fund was made whole with the appropriations from the legislature last year and that the governor signed off on those. But failure to fund that is, we believe, a violation of that. But we can go more in depth on that another time.
Thank you very much, Executive Director Sledge. We're going to take a very brief at ease as we transition. We are back on the record here in Senate Education. We have the Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards, Director Lon Garrison, here with us. Please state your name and start your presentation when you would like.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the Senate Education Committee. My name is Lon Garrison, and I'm the Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. We are a nonprofit organization that serves 52 of 54 school districts across the state. And we were founded in 1954, so slightly before the state actually became state. So we have a long history here supporting school districts across the state. And I'm here to speak with you today about the necessity and really the moral responsibility of sufficiently funding Alaska's public education system. AASB's Board of Directors has adopted three legislative priorities this year, and you can see them on the screen. They are sufficient, sustainable, and predictable education funding, retention and recruitment of teachers, administrators, and staff, and student wellness and safety. I sense a theme recurring here today. Today, my testimony will focus primarily on the issue of sufficient funding, which is a critical factor affecting the retention and recruitment of staff, as well as the safety and wellness of our students. The state of Alaska has always statutorily fulfilled its responsibility to Article 7, Section 1 of Alaska's Constitution, requiring the funding of a system of public education. However, for over a decade, it has not sufficiently invested the resources necessary to ensure that every student can receive an excellent education every day. The AASB membership, which is school board members, has resolved that an increase to the base student allocation should not be less than $860. So let me repeat that, not less than $860. This past November, the AASB Delegate Assembly met and unanimously approved the amendment to a resolution we have, 2.2, urging early, adequate, equitable, and predictable funding of public education. And by specifying this increase to the BSA, an increase of $860 was put forward by the Anchorage School District members as a result of their analysis of early last fall of the difference between the current BSA and the inflation-adjusted value, which at that time they calculated to be approximately $6,820. And that is using the CPI Urban Alaska figure from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So the rate over the past 6 years has not kept up with inflation, obviously, and has done considerable damage in our ability to do what we need to do. A further comparison of the BSA to inflation over the past years, as Director Sarah Sledge mentioned, was it shows that the BSA has only increased by $250 in the last 10 years, which is about a 4.29% increase. So meanwhile, the CPI Urban Alaska values for that same period showed inflation of nearly 25%. So a huge loss in purchasing power. Thus, underfunding Alaska's public education through the BSA has been a chronic issue. Several times, additional funding outside the BSA has been provided, and that was helpful, and we were grateful for that. These one-time discretionary funds, however, have not led to the stability and the predictability that a statutory increase in the BSA would provide. AASB strongly advocates that the BSA also be statutorily connected to an inflation-proofing formula, and our Resolution 2.50, Inflation-Proofed Base Student Allocation, speaks to that issue. Appended to this written testimony is a list of several long-standing resolutions that the AASB membership has approved and is supporting of education funding. So now let me pivot just a little bit and talk about the system of governance and the impact of this on our school districts. So what does this mean for school boards, which by statute are required to approve and implement a balanced budget every year? It has meant having to make the hard decisions, which include reducing staffing, eliminating programs, curtailing extracurricular activities, and diminishing the supports that affect the conditions for learning for each and every student. Locally elected school boards have been delegated the authority to implement a system of public education required by the Alaska Constitution. School board members are tasked with their governing through districts and allocating funds to execute an educational plan for public school students. It's a highly complex task, and I think some of you know that. It's a highly complex task, and in Alaska, school boards have no taxing authority. Therefore, you must rely solely on revenue from the state, the federal government, and in some areas, those areas that are organized within the state, a local contribution, at least a minimum local contribution. Each year, school board members and education advocates appeal for education funding to provide that excellent education for every student every day. A myriad of those operational costs that have been covered here continue to create a strain on the necessary operating revenue to fully employ a school system, and that has dramatically increased. As these operational costs have increased, resources to employ the staff needed to run those schools and deliver the educational support and instruction have been greatly reduced. As a result, the opportunities for all students to succeed diminish, and we see declines in many indicators of student achievement. Over the past year, I've heard from school board members and superintendents across the state about the tremendous strain on their budgets. Of particular note are the incredibly inflated fuel costs, especially for districts with schools that are away from the road system. And Director Sledge's presentation on that was quite graphic. I found that according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration, a report in March of 2022 showed that summer heating fuel costs were going to be unsubsidized for rural Alaska were projected to be 26% higher than the previous winter costs, which meant that many of those costs for heating fuel would be well over $7, and I'm sure maybe even double that in some areas. For example, another thing to consider is a superintendent that I was talking to last spring said, well, here's one incident of what we face daily. When we go to order instructional materials, for about every $100 in materials that we want to purchase, we need to plan for nearly $200 in freight charges just to get the stuff to our school district. Now, that's a remote district. And it's a pretty extreme example, but I think any of us in Alaska who have to ship anything to our state can testify that those shipping costs are quite high today. The highly uncertain nature of the annual legislative appropriation for education funding as part of our state's general fund budget and the potential executive vetoes continually creates uncertainty that makes it difficult to sustain a maintenance of effort in an effective and efficient manner. Time and again, school boards and superintendents must make hard choices that may result in the reduction of staff, the elimination of programs and services, which often negatively impact student achievement. Locally elected school boards have been delegated the authority to implement a system of public education on behalf of the state of Alaska. And in order to do that, they rely upon the state, the local and federal governments for that revenue. School boards implement a local control model that has served Alaska well, but they depend on your support. AASB encourages your support of increasing a BSA by not less than $860 as a way of further supporting Alaska's public school system and Alaska's future through education of its young people. I have a couple of additional quick comments as I've reflected on a few things. One thing is that we have certainly, just like educators and administrators, we've seen a great deal of turnover in school boards. The last 2 years coming through the pandemic and the reduction in funding has created tremendous stresses. And school boards, just like any other part of the system, are subject to that stress as well. So that continual turnover in that leadership and that governance team creates instability. And part of that is due to having to make those hard decisions when resources are scarce. And communities push back. So that's one thing. I watched the governor's State of the State address, and I was heartened, like many of you, that the tone and tenor of his address, I think, gave me some hope that it was focused on moving the state forward, and I sincerely hope that's the case. However, there was one statement that caught in my craw just a little bit, and it had to do with accountability. And that is that, we move from accountability and a measurement of public education success by what we spend to student outcomes. Having been a school board member and involved in this for many years now, and working with school board members and administrators across the state and teachers, I don't know a single person that measures their success by how much we spend on education. We measure success in the fact that students are able to receive a diploma. Students are able to go find post-secondary education and create a life for themselves that's better than anything they could have imagined. So I think, we need to discontinue that false narrative that spending and investing in students is a measurement of our success. It's not. And I completely agree that we need to do everything that we can to raise student achievement and student success, and AASB's membership feels exactly the same way. The last thing I'd like to say is that in terms of some possible solutions, I think one of the things we really need to talk about is the opportunity and the need to decouple education funding from the general fund budget. What are some innovative ways that we can look at creating an opportunity to fund Alaska's public education system in a way that does not have a dramatic impact on the state's operating budget? If you look at where we are at today and how much the permanent fund is responsible for funding state operations in the coming year, why can't we create something similar for education funding? Governor Steve Cooper tried to do it when I first moved to the state years and years ago, and I distinctly remember that issue as it came up, and I was very hopeful that they would actually do that because I could see that it would lend itself to the state and its legacy quite well. And that issue, the issue of funding education appropriately, could be dealt with in a better way. So I'm hopeful, and I don't have any particular solutions, but I do think decoupling public education from the general fund budget is one way to try to address the problem. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Director Garrison. Do we have any brief questions for the director? Senator Stevens.
Well, having served on the school board myself, I understand and appreciate the position you find yourself in, and the fact that people are unwilling to serve these days.
Yes.
I mean, what I saw during COVID crisis is school boards who were attacked for having a masking policy or vaccination policy. And nobody's going to put up with that. So I don't know. But I think that instability, that turnover, I think COVID had a lot to do with it. Do you have any reflection on that?
Yes, through the chair. Yes, I would say that we did see a lot of pressure because of COVID. And we saw, it varied from region to region, community to community, which is we anticipate that, right? Not every community is the same, lots of different values. And I think the beauty of the local control piece is that each school board and school district handled it in a way that was most appropriate for their communities. But that didn't mean it was easy. We know that the Anchorage School Board, for instance, went through a lot of trials and tribulations as they had to deal with a public that is very diverse and has a lot of different views. So I think when you get in some of those situations, it becomes even more challenging. But it would definitely put strain on things, and we have seen a lot of turnover And we are working our tails off because people are saying, well, what is my role? How do I be a school board member? What do I need to do now? So we're feeling it on our end now, too.
Well, you said that very diplomatically, Lon, but no one should be abused the way some of our school board members have been abused. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. And as a daughter of a former school board member, I echo Senator Stevens' comments. We're going to do a very quick changeover here for our last presentation of the day, which is NEA President Tom Claymire. President Claymire, if you will please put yourself on the record, and we will get your slide presentation up here shortly.
Thank you so much, Chair Tobin, and members of the Senate Education Committee. For the record, my name is Tom Claymire, President of NEA Alaska, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak today. And I apologize for not being there in person. Thanks also to my colleagues who have testified so expertly before me. I too would apologize for some repetition, except for the fact that they say you have to hear something seven times to remember it, right? So I will also try to be respectful of time and skip what I can. Next slide. And in that vein, this is a slide about NEA Alaska, and I'm honored to testify on their behalf of our members. And I'll go ahead and skip that slide. Our members are in the schools, in the classrooms where the rubber meets the road, and they'll tell you that our students are struggling. Many of Alaska's students were coming from challenging circumstances even before their lives were disrupted by the global pandemic, which has exacerbated already high levels of social, emotional, and academic trauma. According to data from the Institute of the Education Sciences, the pandemic has taken a dramatic toll on staffing, student behavior, nutrition, attendance, and mental health. However, even before COVID disrupted Alaska's students and schools, our kids were disproportionately facing challenging situations. Next slide, please. According to the 2022 Alaska Kids Count data, Alaska students now rank 41st in overall well-being. And if we just look at economic well-being, specifically, Alaska ranks even lower at 44th. It's a sad fact that 14% of our students are living in poverty and 32% of their parents lack secure employment, 5% higher than the national average. Next slide. Additionally, the same report tells us that Alaska's kids are experiencing high rates of anxiety and depression, up a staggering 51.9% since 2016. This is the reality for many of our students, the world that they live in. So schooling may be an additional challenge and therefore needs additional supports, not fewer. Next slide, please. So let's review the state of Alaska's schools for a moment. This is just a small sampling of the headlines and news reports from around the state about the impacts of flat funding has had on our students and families when it comes to the public schools. Next slide. Fairbanks school closures. Skip it. Kotzebue, we talked about it. Skip that slide. Juneau, class size increase. Keep going. Anchorage school closure. The story is the same. Recommended program cuts and increasing in unsafe class sizes. Although what it doesn't say on the slide is recent ASD data that we've reviewed shows that student attendance is down. And we're not talking about those going to remote or correspondence programs. Students that are enrolled in school, their attendance is down, and the number of students who witnessed or experienced violence in school has increased. Students can't learn anything if they aren't coming to school, nor can they meet their potential if they don't feel safe there. Next slide should be the Alaska teacher placement slide. Dr. Parody covered this well, so I'll skip it as well, except to say that anecdotally that we've heard from members that this number is likely actually a little bit higher. Sometimes the job posting's on there so long and they can't fill it that they take it down. So next slide, please. Additionally, looking at the DEED website and their quick facts, we can see that we've got 1,041 fewer classroom teachers than we did in 2010-11 school year, and the PTR has gone up a full 10%. And I want to make clear that this is an entirely different set of adults missing from our schools. These are position reductions, and if you add that to the previously mentioned unfilled positions, that's over 2,100 fewer adults working with kids in school today than there were a decade ago. And with overall teacher efficacy being the number one factor in student learning, this is an absolutely alarming statistic. Flat funding has literally decimated the most effective learning support we have for our students, and that's the adults in the school. Next slide. So let's dive into the educator crisis more deeply. Next slide, please. The educator turnover rates in Alaska are appalling. I know they touched on this earlier, but 22% for teachers, 25% for principals and superintendents. And of course, these numbers get higher and higher the further off the road system you go. And while there's not a lot of data published on classified staff in this regard, I shudder to think about the turnover rates for our education support professionals. Paras, bus drivers, clerical staff, food nutritionists, et cetera. We've all heard about the bus rolling blackouts. And I think there was an article just yesterday, like 8 ASD schools can't serve hot lunch because of staffing issues. Next slide. Of course, educator turnover has direct and severely negative impacts on student education. And I'll summarize this one just to say that there is sort of a momentum and a cyclical effect, a feedback loop, if you were, that you have shortages in some areas, they contribute to more workloads for those that remain, and puts more pressure on those people, which contribute to another group, more pressure. And in all cases, it leads to further turnover that could have been avoided. And sadly, we know that all of this disproportionately impacts all of our most vulnerable students in remote and Title I schools. Next slide. I couldn't see the slides that Dr. Parody was showing. I think she may have put this one up as well, but it bears repeating that, people want to say, show me the data. Diane Hirschberg of ICER has done that research and can demonstrate a clear connection between teacher turnover and student outcomes. It's kind of a no-brainer to understand that when you have stable, consistent, experienced, talented staff, you can build relationships that connect with kids in a nurturing environment where they feel safe to learn. The performance of students in schools with the lowest teacher turnover is nearly twice that of the students in the schools with the highest turnover. Certainly, there are other factors in play as well that are related, but we cannot overemphasize the importance of retaining our educators. The implication is crystal clear. If we want improved student performance, we've got to do what's necessary to retain our best and brightest educators. Next slide, please. And this turnover comes at a cost. These numbers are a little bit out of date, came in 2017, so probably higher today, but 20,000 to recruit and train a replacement for a teacher who's left. Which is about $20 million a year per state, per year statewide. And we're told that it's about $75,000 per administrator. And again, the imperative is clear. If we want to avoid these costs, we need to create an environment where educators are respected in order to keep them here. Next slide. The good news is that we can do something about this. Restoring a defined benefit retirement option is one of the most expensive retention tools we can use to help reverse the teach and leave problem that Alaska seems to be plagued with. Next slide, please. I would like to wholeheartedly thank the governor for creating the Alaska Teacher Recruitment and Retention Task Force to tackle this issue head on. In doing so, he commissioned perhaps the most extensive survey of certificated educators ever done in the state and has followed it up with an action plan. And now they're working on the implementation phase of that plan. You can see more about that on the DEED website if you're interested. Next slide. But I'll highlight a few things. Here you can see the top issues for educators in terms of the factors that are personally most important to them in terms of keeping them in public education in Alaska. For certificated educators, the top four factors were salary, working conditions, connections with students, and fixing our broken retirement system. For administrators, retirement benefits were number one. Next slide, please. When asked what were the most effective solutions to attracting and retaining our educators, the results are compelling. Many of these issues we've already discussed in terms of funding in the top 10, but funding doesn't fix retirement. And you'll note that three of the top 8 solutions identified here have to do with fixing retirement, and the most valued solution is a return to a defined benefit retirement option. Next slide. Alaska is the only state in the country where teachers do not have a defined benefit option for retirement. The only one. TERS members are further penalized because they are also denied the safety net of Social Security. Additionally, those who have earned Social Security in other jobs prior to becoming an educator or accrued enough earnings from their summer and weekend jobs lose a substantial portion of those Social Security benefits that they earned and paid for because of an arcane rule called the Government Pension Offset Windfall Elimination Provision, or GPO-WEP. We talk about that more offline later. This remains true for employees hired after 2006, despite the fact that they do not receive a pension. Next slide, please. Here we use a stool to represent retirement security. With all three financial legs firmly on the ground, one can reasonably expect to have stability and security in retirement. However, without a pension or Social Security, Alaska really does put our educators at financial risk in retirement, which gives them a huge incentive to leave the state after 5 years, taking all of their DC contributions that employers in the state paid to them in order to earn a pension elsewhere. In fact, this has become so common now that a term has been coined for it. They're calling it educational tourism. Next slide. So when asked the question about the DC plan's ability or lack thereof to offer a secure retirement, Alaska's previous chief investment officer did a study to suss out that answer. Next slide, please. After running the computer modeling of 10,000 different iterations to calculate the likelihood of retirement success, which was defined as having sufficient funds to last 30 years into retirement after having had a 30-year career, he found that TERS members hired after 2006 only had a 31% chance of success, meaning the inverse, that a shocking 69% of TERS Tier 3 retirees are likely to run out of money earlier in their retirement. That's appalling and unacceptable. No wonder why they're leaving the state. Next slide, please. Here's the chart showing the same thing, essentially only the top quartile having enough money in retirement. We've absolutely got to fix this. Next slide. That said, increasing the BSA and inflation-proofing it moving forward are the first and most urgently needed actions to address the crisis facing our students, families, and schools. And we can skip slides 28 and 29. Certainly, this is what our students deserve and our families deserve. You guys can read that. And although Ms. Lon spoke to it well, I also want to express our appreciation for our colleagues at the Alaska Association of School Boards for setting the floor on negotiations by drawing a line at the BSA increase of no less than $860 per student. It's so important that that's a minimum amount, right? Because it only takes into account consideration of the rise in cost back to 2017, when really we've been flat funded for the last 10 of 12 years. If we want to make this right for students, the number needs to be much higher. Next slide, please. I'm sorry, one back. Yeah, thank you. We're already hearing the argument from some that if the BSA increases, and Senator Stevens had a question earlier about it, that it has to be tied to some sort of accountability. So I'd like to take a moment to address that particular issue. Although I originally had like four slides and really worked to condense it down, it's probably a subject for further conversation later. You know, as educators, we recognize the value of tests. Shoot, we invented them, right? We appreciate what tests can do to help us assess where students are, where they're at, and identify what they may need for additional instruction, extra support, or a different approach to the material. However, a national standardized test score or any other single measure doesn't capture their innovative thinking, their character, or richness of their academic knowledge, their talents, ability, or predict their success in life. If it can't even give us the full picture about one individual student, then there's no way a single metric can be used to responsibly assess our entire school system. We certainly acknowledge that our students are struggling and that we can and must do more to get their learning back on track. And educators are working diligently every day, all day long. And even now as we speak, after school, offering additional tutoring, math labs, and other after-school programs all over the state. Well, except for where those programs have been cut. In order to properly assess student learning, we must use multiple measures of progress, and that does include some testing, but we need to do more to capture the full depth of a student's knowledge, their learning growth, and the full breadth of their abilities. And that data ought to be used to inform their instruction, not to punish schools for falling short. We don't penalize dentists because their patients still get cavities despite their advice. In fact, we reward them very highly for fixing their teeth. The same mentality should be applied to schools. We identify areas of need and then we direct resources to that need in order to provide the support kids need to grow and succeed. Last slide, please. This is my last slide. Alaska's Education Challenge is a great example of taking this holistic policy approach to direct our school system and use multiple measures of progress to evaluate our getting there. Each of the five positive trajectories have several different metrics by which to measure success by 2025. And although the timeline's getting tight, DEED is doing great to work to achieve these goals. As Commissioner, Heidi Teschner testified last Monday to the same topic, but the funding famine is severely undermining districts' ability to achieve those goals. The Alaska's READS Act, a bipartisan effort between the legislature and the governor, including the hard work of many of you on this committee, is being implemented, and I wanted to thank you for your efforts. This will be a great start in providing additional early learning opportunities for students and supporting professional development for elementary teachers. The self-determination inherent in compacting is inspiring. We're looking forward to seeing the demonstration projects and following the progress this session. Now, I already mentioned the TRR working group, but the fact is most of their recommendations will rely on additional funding and other legislative action like restoring a defined benefit retirement option. On the other hand, many of our school programs supporting these efforts are on life support or are already flatlined. CTE programs are getting cut across the state, counselor positions being eliminated. Our students feel less safe, and the educator shortage needs to be addressed immediately. Sincere efforts by educators and school districts to achieve the improved student outcomes as envisioned in the Alaska Education Challenge obviously exist. Although there are lots of red X's on the slide because the goals are in jeopardy. But as I said before, we identify a need and we direct resources to that need in order to achieve the goal. We have an opportunity here to right the ship. For us to advance the consensus policy goals in Alaska's Education Challenge, districts and educators need the resources to succeed. We must summon the political fortitude that has eluded us during the past decade in order to substantially increase the BSA this year, include an annual CPI adjustment moving forward, and restore a defined benefit retirement option this session. Thank you. That concludes my remarks, and I'm available for questions.
Thank you, President Kramer. I know that we are coming up at the top of the hour, and so we're going to hold questions because I know you will be back. However, we have one brief question by Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A clarifying question. I may have heard something wrong, and I wanted to be clear. Mr. Kramer, you talked about defined benefits, pensions, as the most something tool to help fix some of our educator problems, and I couldn't tell if you said expensive or effective.
Through the chair, Senator Keel, absolutely, I said effective. In fact, there are several models of defined benefit pensions that actually saved the state money.
Thank you very much, President Kramer. Thank you, Senator Keel, for asking for that clarification. We know we will have you back as we'll be talking about defined benefits again here in this committee, particularly related to educators, as we work through this crisis of our schools that we are experiencing. With that, I want to thank everyone today for joining us and for their incredible testimony. I know that everyone in this room is here to support education, and as we work forward on finding solutions together, I know that we will be doing some really great things in the months to come. So with that concludes our agenda today. Our next meeting for the Senate Education Committee will be on Friday, January 27th, here in this room, the Belts Committee Room, from 3:30 to 5, and we will be receiving a rural perspective on education. So we'll be hearing from Northwest Arctic Borough School District Superintendent Terry Walker and Kenai Peninsula Borough School District Superintendent Clayton Holland. If you have any additional questions, please submit those here. We will get them to the presenter today. Also on Friday, we'll be hearing from ICER. I think we're all looking forward to hearing about their research on education funding, particularly in how we compare to the per pupil spending on the national average. So with that, I conclude today's committee hearing exactly at 5 p.m.